Is there anything, Howard, that you or any of the team would like to talk about before I begin?
Not necessarily Supernova, just, you know, work stuff obviously is always going on. We just had another mini audit Monday and Tuesday, and Patty did a great job, so the branch did well. And then there's a new advisor coming on the other side to Stiefel today, so that'll distract us for a little bit, but not too much.
Well, it's always nice to have those audits over, no matter how good you feel about it going in. It's nice to see them leave.
Yeah.
Was that a surprise audit?
No. It was. They had one this summer, and so they came back and did something else. I didn't quite understand.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got through it. All right. The number one piece of homework this week was to begin to call your clients who you're retaining and telling them about the refinements to your practice. Howard, tell me how that went for you.
Yeah, so I worked on the script, and I wasn't comfortable with it, so I did it again yesterday and refined it because I started to talk to people just kind of when people started asking me, like a friend was in the other day and asked me what type of clients we had, and I kept leading with we were downsizing our practice, and I'm like, that's not the right way to say it. So I wasn't comfortable until I went back, and so I took the notes from the binder and then that Patty had and made my own, like, cheat sheet of, like you said, to put it in my own words.
Okay.
I can do it now because I'm more comfortable with what I have.
Actually have the script that you talked about.
But I did my own.
Right.
All right. I'm not understanding what you said. You had a person who came in and asked that question, what kind of clients you were looking for, or did you start on the –
Yeah, so I had a friend come in who's starting a business. He bought a franchise, and I was trying to help him out, and I gave him five or six other people to meet with. And then he said, hey, can you tell me more about what you guys are doing and what type of clients you're looking for? And so I started with the end of mine. I started saying we're downsizing our practice, and I caught myself. I'm like, that's not how I want to introduce it. That's why I was saying I don't think I was ready to talk about it.
Okay. So you are you comfortable right now?
Yes. With it in front of me.
Okay. Tell me what you're going to say, and don't worry about saying it. You know, just give me the words that you're going to say. Don't worry about how you're framing them.
Right. So I would use, from time to time, we take a step back. We've hired a consultant to help us with our practice, and he made some suggestions how to refine our practice. Could you have a minute for me to tell you about it?
Okay.
And then I would say, you know, we're a concierge practice for a limited number of people. The main reason we're trying to limit is we can only deliver our superior level of service to a limited number of clients. And then that sentence about we can never let the growth of our practice, you know, compromise the service we deliver to you, our existing clients. And then you can go into the bullet points of why we're doing it.
Okay. All right.
So one would be, you know, we're trying to, you know, significantly reduce the size of our practice. We're establishing a minimum. We're trying to control the size of our practice, trying to maintain a good level of communication. We always want to have capacity for people like you. Monthly scheduled calls, rapid response of customer inquiries in a 24-hour period, a higher level of planning, a coordinated effort like we have in the past with your accountants and attorneys. Those are the main, you know, benefits we see for you.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to get rid of the word trying, Howard.
Okay.
This is something that you're doing. It's not what you're trying to do.
Right.
You use the word trying, and I understand what you're saying. And I said,
I didn't notice that. Yeah.
But it just doesn't feel solid enough to me.
Okay.
You've made the commitment, and I'll follow up on this in a minute. Last time we spoke, you and Scott had 183 households. So you've made a commitment to get down to at least that number, right?
Right, for sure.
So you're not you have brought down the size of your practice. Once you have that in your mind, that what you're getting down to, we think you're down there. So don't tell you're going to reduce. We have reduced the size of our practice. So
okay.
it just has a different feel to me when you talk about what you've already done. When I would sit down and talk to advisors who work for me, a major difference between the folks who were doing okay and the folks who were doing really well is the folks doing really well always talked about what they had done. The folks who weren't doing as well always talked about what they were going to do. You see the difference?
For sure. It's subtle semantics, but it makes a big difference.
Well, to interject, if we said we have already reduced the size of our practice, that lets the clients that we are keeping know that we consider them important and we're happy to have them. It just, if you say we've reduced the size of our practice, we're still keeping, it gives them that affirmation.
You make a great point, because if you said you're going to reduce the size, it might lead the client to think, I wonder if I'm staying or going. So that's a very good observation. Now let me make another observation, Howard. Your friend who bought the franchise said, tell me about your business, what type of client you're looking for.
Yeah.
This is the answer, and this will all become second nature to you. You won't even have to think about it. But when you're first starting, repetition makes us – if we have reps on the right thing, we get better. So
sure. What
I think he was asking you was, what does your ideal client look like?
He did, and I got to that part, and I was able to say that fairly well. So I said, our absolute minimum is $500,000 if they meet our values. We like them, we trust them, that back and forth. But I told them a majority of our clients are $5 million or more. So I was able to say that.
Okay, well, not the majority of your clients. Is that a true statement? The majority of your clients?
No, 44%.
Okay. Remember, a disproportionate share of our business, of our practice, is with people with $5 million and more.
He's
just semantics. The majority is not true. The majority have to be 51. Disproportionate is a proportion. It's a heavier, 20% of the clients represent, 20 clients represent 44% of that revenue. That's a disproportion. It's semantics, but it's true. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So am I hearing Scott in the background?
That was Peter.
That's Peter.
Okay, is Scott there yet? Because I wanted to ask Scott the same question. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, he's here. Hi.
Scott, were you able to make any calls this week to your existing clients, the clients who are staying with you?
So I have not. And I did the other day talk to my number one critic, who's my wife, and tried to articulate to her some of the key points that we're trying to establish.
It was brave.
My wife's an attorney, and she's pretty tough. So, the practice is important. I'm not ready to go to the clients because I, similar to Howard, and, I kind of gave her some of the main points that were, in writing, so I could just talk to her as if she were a client. And, I hem and hawed and argue and this, and so it was not a great experience, so to speak. But it's part of the practice to hone in on the important key factors that we've gone over and over again, reducing the practice, concierge service, rapid fire, responses, scheduling appointments. All the key things that we're trying to articulate, the more you say them, and the tougher the audience. I started with, the number one client instead of the number 20, 35 client. similar to what Howard's saying, I'm not ready. I haven't honed in all the specific rapid-fire responses to articulate. So I'm getting closer.
Well, Rob, I went through last night because I got back last week's thing, and what I liked was after you do your bullet points, you ask them, do they have any questions? To see if they have, you know, to follow up with that. And I think that's important, as you said in last week's meeting. Once you go through the introduction and your bullet points, do you have any questions, you know, so that we can clarify any points that they may have or any questions, just to make sure that they understand, you know, you want the client, you want a two-way conversation.
Absolutely. If you go through this and then it's goodbye, I don't think you've gotten the most out of the call. It's always good to probe for acceptance. So that's an excellent point. Howard and Scott, you got to get going on these calls. These are great calls.
Yep.
I know you got a lot going on. Don't take this as criticism. Take it as a fact. You have to start making these calls. And I can't guarantee much of anything. But what my experience is after you make two or three of these calls, you're not going to have to even look down at your notes or your bullet points, whatever it is. These are great calls. Clients love hearing that they are going to be part of something special. They probably already feel that way because they stay with you a long time. But you know, this isn't a margin call. This isn't a physician that's gone bad.
Right.
This is a service that you're refining.
Yep.
You're never going to have it perfectly the way you want it. The only way you're going to have it the way you want it is to make the pitch, and as was mentioned a second ago, as you respond to questions, you'll be refining your script. It's just I can't emphasize enough that you got to get started on this. Now, Scott, when you were making this presentation to your wife, was she fighting? Not fighting, but was she not comfortable with what you were saying or how you were saying it?
How I was saying it.
Okay, she wasn't arguing over the fact that bringing the size of the practice down and so on was the wrong thing.
No, not at all.
We will make calls this week, Robert, for next week.
It's important that you do that now.
We will.
Since you haven't gotten started, let's just go back and review some of the things that are important. The client gives you pushback. Scott, I don't really want to have – I don't think I want monthly calls. It's important that you stand up for your idea. I understand, Ms. Jones, this is different. Could we try it for 3 months? And if it still feels like too much, we'll dial it back. And Ms. Jones says, Scott, you're not listening to me. I just don't want to have monthly calls. You've stood up for your idea. She still doesn't want to have monthly calls. And you say, I hear you. I didn't get to this point in my career by not listening to my clients or however you want to put it. Could we go ahead and schedule the monthly calls, the quarterly reviews?
Quarterly calls, right.
The quarterly calls. And then they say yes. That's on their calendar. And you on your calendar is going to be all 12 calls. You just pick them. You make those calls without their being scheduled. You with me?
Yep.
What,
got it.
The number one driver of client satisfaction is proactive FA contact. So you've offered monthly. They don't think that's going to be comfortable. Whatever. You're still reaching out to them on a monthly basis. All right. Now, you're going to start this service. We talked about last week, you're going to start the service in March. Does that still feel like the right thing? Or, and this is, I'm not asking this question with prejudice. I'm asking, it's an honest question. Does March still feel like it's doable? or do you think you should push it back to April?
I don't see why we couldn't do it. I mean,
I don't either.
So, I mean, we have more basically, you know, it's 80 calls over the next month to introduce it.
That's exactly what it is, and there are going to be some people that you're not going to get in touch with for whatever reason.
Right.
And there's a letter in your manual for that purpose. It's not what you lead with, but if you can't get in touch with some people, and that's going to be the case, you send them the letter.
Now, you're talking about the scheduling starts March 1, or are you talking about the scheduling starts April 1?
The scheduling starts March 1.
That might be hard.
Okay.
Timing wise.
Well, okay. Now let's think about this. If you make a call to somebody today, Howard, and they say great, and you're going to say we're going to start this in, I'm just going to use March, over the next 2 weeks, Patty is going to be calling you and scheduling a time that works best for you. So while you're making the call, the scheduling doesn't happen immediately, but it will start in March. Now, you can start people. You don't have to start people in the first week of March. You can start them in the last week of March. It doesn't really make any difference. But again, two things. If we push it back to April, I don't want you all to lose your focus on it because you've got an extra month.
Right. I'd rather have the pressure of March.
So the call is going to be, we're going to start this in March, and Patty will be in touch with you in the next couple of weeks to set a time that works best for you.
Right.
Now, I'll cover this more in depth starting next week. We schedule you can't schedule your call is the third of every month because sometimes that's going to fall on the weekend. So they're the second Tuesday, the third Monday, whatever. So just because it's starting in March doesn't mean that they start the first week of March. They may start, they may want their call the fourth Monday of the month, whatever.
Right.
You with me? Now,
yeah.
So are you hitting all
a little ahead of myself? Say it again, please.
Supernova and half hours.
Right. So yeah, those 80 clients, we're touching them between now and March to let them know about the supernova change.
Correct.
And then starting in March from scheduling.
Correct. Sometime in March. Right. Okay.
Got it.
Yep.
All right. Now. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but we're at a point where I think it's important to have this conversation. Who do you want to give the most flexibility to with the schedule? Your best clients.
Right.
So it's always better when Patty starts the scheduling to be able to go to Mr. Big and say, you know, give them three or four choices instead of saying, well, what we've got open is Thursday at the third Thursday at 3 o'clock. So it's always better to start with your best clients.
Sure.
All right. Okay. You got the progression. You know how to walk through that. You're going to start in March, and you're going to let them know that Patty will be calling to help them select a time. And I'll make all that clear next week, beginning next week. All right, just any update on the clients? Last time you told me you had 183. Any adjustment to that number?
No, we just worked on households and so forth, and I think that's a really good number. And now we're going to work on possibly of the 183, who can we reduce? So Peter's working on a list for that, and we're trying to still combine assets and revenue. But, no, Scott and I went over the 183 the other day.
Okay. Howard, doesn't that feel good to be having those kind of conversations with your partner? I mean, you all are running a big business. I mean, every business owner, and that's what you all are. You're running your own business with the advantages of working for a a large company, these are conversations that just make sense. Howard and I have gone over, we're looking at the size of our practice. Now, that 183, that does that include Butler's?
No.
Okay.
Well, it probably does, actually. Yes, it does. Scott and I did a line yesterday of Supernova and Butler, so it does.
Okay, so that 183, once you ferret out the Butler's, it's going to be get smaller.
Correct. It won't. Yeah, okay. It won't be 80 for each of us.
Okay. Have you made a final decision on where you're going to go with the clients who are no longer staying with you?
We have not, though, but the branch manager, like I said, he has two people in Dayton, and then this new person who's coming here may want them as well, but we'll have to go to Dayton in the interim until this guy gets up and running for the next, month or so.
Okay.
But Scott and I, we'll set up a call in the next week or so to talk to these people in Dayton.
Okay. Now, remember that if you – the very best thing is to give them all to one person.
Yeah.
With the stipulation – they got to call them all. They can't
right.
cherry pick.
Right.
They because if they do, if they cherry pick, guess who the people are going to call who you haven't that you've given away? They're going to come back
right.
to you, and that's not what we want. All right. Are you still comfortable with your $500,000 minimum?
Yes. But,
okay.
but back to your last point, Rob. As far as how this whole process makes us feel, I think we saw it when Tricia came. Is we just run at capacity forever and ever and ever. We've always run just busy, with our heads cut off all the time, and just this whole thing just made us step back and just figured that we just have too many households to take care of at the level we're trying to do. And it was just we've known it, we've never done anything about it, but it just made it crystal clear by going through this process. And when you start to count the number of people, the number of households, the number of exceptions, the number of this, the number of that. We just have never left ourselves room to breathe or capacity to grow with the right people.
It's total affirmation that you're doing the right thing.
We've just been reactive. It's just we have no time to do anything proactively.
Well, that's been our experience. That's what we find. And when you just say all we have time to do is be reactive, that's not a comfortable place to be. That's not where people work their best. They work their best when they can be proactive. And golly darn, guess what? The number one driver of client satisfaction is proactive FA contact. So this all fits together. Here's what else is going to happen. Now I'm getting really ahead of myself. Is you are going to be better at starting referral conversations, Howard, because you know what you can quantify what you do and how it's different from what the market offers. You're not saying you're going to be the best stock picker. If you say that, and it's true, you won't be next year. You're showing people a model that they're not seeing anywhere else. It just gives FAs confidence to put themselves into referral conversation. So all makes sense. Now, let's go over the ideal day. And this is more work that Howard, you and Scott are going to have to do. What do you when Patty begins to schedule? You have to tell her what you want your schedule to look like.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? What time do you want to start your day? What time do you want your day over? Are there times? Do you go to Rotary? The first Thursday of every month. So. You've got to let her know what you want your calendar to look like. After you take out the Butlers, you're going to be at least at 180. That's 90 calls. That's 90 calls a month. That means you're not going to have five every day. Let's just say, to make a point, you had 80 calls. That's four a day. Do you want to do 4 days of five rather than 5 days of four? Do you want to
right.
take Fridays afternoons off? These are all questions. You have earned the right to control your own calendar.
Right.
You want Patty to schedule the way that fits you and Scott. So you got to start thinking through that as before Patty starts her calls. Got it?
Right. So, but the math, because I like to do math. So the calls, when it's just the monthly call, those are, you say 15 to 20 minutes, but is it really that long?
No, probably not. But you have to keep an hour. Some of those calls are going to be an hour. Your quarterly calls.
Right, and I meant just the monthly call.
Yeah, here's what we think. We think that your quarterly calls are your quarterly calls are going to take somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour. Your non-review calls are going to take 15 minutes max. If they take longer than 15 minutes, that's probably a good thing because you've gotten into a conversation with your client. So if let's say do you see that 2/3 of your calls are going to be relatively short calls, 5 to 15 minutes?
Yeah.
So that's 2/3. Let's say you've got a day when you got 5 calls, just making it up. The odds tell you that there's probably 2 quarterly reviews in there, and there's probably 3 non-review calls. That's just the numbers. So if you think about that, you look like on your calendar you'd be scheduled for 5 hours. In reality, you've got 2 hours with reviews, and you got maybe 45 minutes with non-review calls. So while you looks like you're scheduled for 5 hours, there's still plenty of time in the day for prep, for being proactive, whatever. Got it?
Yeah. That's the one thing I wanted to walk through when I read it, the chapter 4. So now I just want to go look on a calendar, and as you said, kind of, you know, what time do I want to start? Do I want to start at 9 o'clock, and what time do I want my last one is 4, and what days and all that? So I need to do that. That'll be fun.
You need, yeah. And again, this is a backdoor way to look to how many, you know, clients you have. I mean, if you started with, this is what I want my schedule to look like, now you know how many clients that you can handle, right?
Right.
So
you sort of have to know your vacation schedule then, too, though.
Well, I'm going to walk you. No, you don't.
Okay.
I'm going to walk you through a way to reschedule that's really simple, makes all the sense in the world, but today's not the day to do that.
Fair enough.
But don't worry. Everybody gets to take a vacation.
Good.
Also, guess what? Your clients take vacations, too. So
sure.
I don't know if it'll be next week or not, but we will get into a way to reschedule that.
Great.
We've got a couple more.
And Rob.
Yes.
I'm working with Cindy tomorrow on the scheduling tools to start on that, just to let you know. And then Peter and Tricia want me to go through it with them so that they're familiar when I'm not here how it works. So we're all going to go through it.
Peter, you had a question?
Yeah, So you're saying we're scheduling these 15-minute calls for the guys, and, you know, sometimes it might turn into an hour call, which isn't necessarily bad. In terms of how he controls his calendar, you know, so he has calls, there's other things going on, you know, how does Patty make room for that? Does she block out an hour of his time for that 15-minute call?
No.
Every call, Peter, is an hour.
Every call is an hour?
Every call has an hour set aside. See, if somebody's going to be the same time every month, second Tuesday at 10 o'clock, you've got to leave that 10 o'clock open for an hour every month. You're not going to use it all, but these are recurring appointments. You have to leave time for the long, you have three types of appointments. You have reviews over the phone, you have reviews in person, and you have reviews, non-review calls. You have to leave an hour open on the schedule because sometimes you need an hour for the review.
Let me ask you this.
Peter, did I answer your question?
Sort of. You did. So let me bring
up
a number.
No, you did.
But it brings up another question. So we have that hour scheduled call, monthly call set up for Howard. And then Howard also has, he expects us to go 15, 20 minutes. So he's okay with scheduling a review meeting right afterward. Instead of 8 to 9, he's got that 15-minute call, but we block out an hour. The call goes for an hour. Should we schedule that meeting behind him 15 minutes after that hour ends to give him a little bit of a breather, or are we just stacking?
You got an appointment.
Well, I think Patty will be able to answer that. Patty, that was you who said you got the call with Cindy, didn't you? Wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Patty will be able to answer that question after her call with Cindy. You can put people – this is like a – I feel like a cat unwinding a ball of twine here. Here's – on the scheduler, everybody goes on a cycle. And a January-July cycle, if somebody's on, that means they've got their in-person in January and July. So by definition, they would have their non-in-person on April and October, and the other months would be non-review months. You don't want to put Howard or Scott on the same cycle. That means they would be having all their reviews in the same 2 months. So you put some people on April, July. You put some people on February, August. Do y'all understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. You're staggering.
It wasn't very. You stagger them. You want those. Go ahead.
So those big clients, we have to make sure that they're staggered first, because I'm making those calls first. You don't want to have the number one and number two clients the same week, correct?
You probably don't want them on the same day. I think the same week works out.
Sure.
But you don't have to. You might want to have, just to make a point, let's say you got 12 major clients. You probably want them, some of them on January, July. You'd want some of them on February, August.
So when they're doing their list, there's specific people that Scott likes to meet with in December and what. So using that strategy, I would say, you like to meet with this person every year at this time. This is the schedule we're going to follow from now on. Here's their other work, and build it that way as well, backwards.
If Scott wants to talk to a certain person every December, they would be on a June-December cycle.
Right. So if they have a preference of when they like to meet or when they plan their travels to see people, that's the schedule we set them up with, and then from there. Okay.
I think it will be clear after you talk to Cindy.
Okay.
Sounds
all right.
Good. Okay.
All right. Trust me. We'll get.
We're trusting you.
It's like looking at a cloud. It looks all confusing, and then all of a sudden. Boom. You can see the cow everybody else can see up in the clouds. All right. Not a good analogy. Okay. I want to hit two things to get started with around acquisition. I want to just spend a second on centers of influence. Here's what a center of influence is. Center of influence is someone who gives you referrals or is in a position to give you referrals. Scott, can you think of one person who is a great referral source for you or could be a great referral source?
Yes.
Okay. I would like for you and Howard each, and this doesn't – I know I've given you a lot of other stuff to do. This won't take any time. I would like for you to come to next week's meeting with two people who you think are candidates to be a center of influence for you. They might not be
not
the right
currently.
Ones.
They can be current.
No, they can either be giving referrals or they're
right.
in a position to give referrals. Now, it's got to be somebody you know. It can't be somebody you'd like to have as a center of influence. So, Scott, you and Howard each come with two people that you think can be centers of influence. The other thing is I want to start working on something we call a practice overview. This is a one page overview of your practice, and we're going to put this together over time. It takes some thought. So here's what I would like for you to do, and I'll send you an email just so you know, just to make sure you understand what I'm saying. In this practice overview, you have to have, I want you to have your basic beliefs. I want you to say what, have a list of what clients can expect from you, and there's a list of what you can what you expect of clients, and I'll send you an example of what that might look like. So
okay.
the thing for next week. Also, I would like for you to come to the meeting with one basic belief. And a basic belief is not financial planning. A basic belief is transparency. It's the client's interests come first. I mean, big picture things that clients can look at this and get to know you right off the bat. So I want each of you to come, and I'd like for you to do it independently. One basic belief of the practice. I would like for you to come with one thing that clients can expect from you. An example of that could be monthly scheduled contact. And then I want one thing that you expect of clients. It sends a big time message to prospective clients when you say, this is who I am, this is what you can expect from me, and then to say, and this is what we expect of our clients. That sends a pretty strong message that you all know what you're doing. You know how you get it done. This is a two-way street. Most times, advisors, when they're with prospective clients, promise, 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 but they never tell the client what they expect. An example of what you expect of clients, prompt disclosure of any material changes, significant changes in net worth, or risk tolerance. That's just an example. I'm not saying that's what you put on the list. But I will send you, in a few minutes, I will send you what that looks like. So that the homework for next time is make the calls.
Yep.
That's the most important. If you can only get one thing done, make the calls. The second thing is for each of you to come with one person who can be a center of influence. And then the third thing is to come with a basic belief, one thing that you expect clients can expect from you, and the third thing is one thing that you expect of clients. But again, I'll put all that in an email. Any questions?
So don't work on the ideal day yet. We don't need to give that to Patty yet. We're still too early.
Patty doesn't need to know that until she starts making the calls.
All right, I'll take it off my list of things to do then. That's good.
Yeah, well.
For now.
Don't take it off. Just put it at the bottom. How about
you? You got it.
That's kind of like when you meet with your boss at the end of the year, and he says, great year. Now, what have you done for me this year?
Right.
We want to keep all that stuff on the list. And on top
Scott
of that,
and
I want you to run. Go ahead.
Okay. And I want Scott and I to still go through the list of potential clients to move, and we need to have those conversations with somebody else. I want to keep that going.
Yeah, you do, because it's one thing to have made the commitment to get down to that number. It's another thing to get them out of the practice. It makes a big difference to the team when they're not getting calls from those people that are no longer going to be serviced by you.
Fair enough.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, guys.
statement, Judge Neil Gorsuch could lead the Supreme Court to a new conservative era. So what does this woman really mean for America? Jackie Bonilla is here with what you need to know about the new SCOTUS nominee. Jackie, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Abby. Meet Justice Neil Gorsuch, likely your ninth member of the U.S. Supreme Court. The Denver native, considered by many to be the most conservative pick to fill that vacancy. Colleagues calling him as original as they come. Listen.
He would look at the Constitution of the United States as it was written and as it was intended to be applied by the founders, by the framers of the Constitution. He would be looking backward to the law as it was enacted rather than